The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
There are lots of lousy businesses, and there's lots of wonderful businesses.
It's the art and science of money.
My job has been to try and figure out which is which.
It's Hi-Fi Radio from the Global News Radio studios in Toronto with Hi-Fi portfolio managers. Here's Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartle.
Welcome to the show, my friends. Show about money indeed. I am Wolfgang Klein. Welcome. Jack Hartle, my portfolio manager, partner in crime. Jack, how are you doing today?
Very well, Wolf. Very well. Thanks.
Don Vilo, market technician. She was a friend of mine for over 20 years, a veteran on Bay Street. Don has worked in the industry for over five decades. He just doesn't retire. He just keeps going and publishing and writing. And it's a pleasure to spend some time with him, get his views. He is a chartered technician, and he's also very much focused on seasonal investing. And if we may, Don, let's start with the big picture to begin with. The market's been very volatile, as we all know, this year. But at the same time, quite resilient in many ways. What is noticeable is the amount of rotation that has taken place. Tech stocks and growth stocks have been sold down. And the value theme, which is very much what Canada is, has woken up. Canadian market positive on the year, while the U.S. market and global markets remain negative on the year. Coupled with something I learned in rookie school back when I first met you, Don, and that is... with respect to geopolitical events, notably wars, when the bombs fall, that's the buy signal. Any merit to my last statement? And welcome to the show, my friend.
Yeah, it turns out that there are certain sectors that clearly would benefit when that happens. The defensive sector is clearly one sector that'll benefit. Others are the things like the material sector, companies that produce copper, zinc, steel, that kind of thing. These are the kind of stocks which benefit under a kind of a war scenario.
Don, when you look at the charts, which you do frequently, the commodity run that we have witnessed, Fidelity put out a very good piece. I shared it on my private client conference call that Jack and I host about once a month, exclusive to clients, members of the Wolf on Bay Street Club. And it was a great chart, but it reminded Jack and I that these commodities have had a nice run. In other words, past tense, that is what has occurred. And it doesn't mean it's going to continue with the same trajectory. And in fact, it looks like some of these commodities are already trading, I'd say, two standard deviations from their mean when you look at the historical move that they have had. Can you speak to that point, Don?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a reason why should we say, risk-on assets like... the metals and steel and so on have done very well. It has a lot to do with the seasonality. Historically, seasonal influences are favorable for North American equity markets from around the middle of March right through until at least the early summer, and frequently until around the middle of July. We seem to be going through that kind of a period right now. And it's most notable in the case of the U.S. We're seeing strength happening with the so-called infrastructure stocks. These will all benefit from that huge infrastructure program that was passed by Congress late last year. They're going to spend $1.7 trillion on improving airports, building roads, supporting electronic use, things like e-cards, and so on, et cetera. So that trend really became... fully established right around the middle of March this year. Prior to that, we had a nice correction, bought prices down to reasonable prices. And now we're starting to see some really good action on the upside. Most notably in Canada, we've seen the TSE Composite respond very, very strong to improving commodity prices. The TSE Composite just went to an all-time high just during the last week or so. Looks like it will continue doing that right through until at least the summer.
Please, Jack.
Yeah, no, I would just add in there, some of these commodities as well, it's really due to the base effects. So you look at, you know, whether it's uranium or oil, like uranium was dead money since Fukushima back in 2011. It didn't do anything. Germany was shutting down reactors. It was a dark time for uranium. You look at oil back in the fact that, you know, with the shutdowns because of COVID, it went negative. So when you look at the percentage returns on some of those charts that we saw from Fidelity, a lot of it is due to base effects, meaning a lot of those commodities did nothing for 10 years. And then all of a sudden you have a catalyst. Again, the Ukrainian situation is a humanitarian disaster. It's very unfortunate, but for copper, uranium, oil, all those things that were quietly just sitting there doing nothing basically for 10 years, they finally had a catalyst. And Ukraine situation exposed the fact that, you know, we're very reliant on Russia for all of these things. The good news for Canada is we also produce a lot of the same stuff. So as Don said, you know, TSX is making all-time highs as we speak. And some of it's due to seasonality, but a lot of it is also due to the fact that, you know, we are a safe supplier of a lot of these commodities.
Well, this ESG theme has had a huge impact on why commodity prices are so high today. Jack, you pointed this out to me a year ago, and I completely bought into your belief and thesis in that when you're trying to go non-carbon or carbon neutral, carbon zero, you stop putting money to traditional carbon, which reduces supply and demand remains steady. All of a sudden prices go higher. Throw in a geopolitical event, again, a Six Sigma event that is unexpected, and look at the dislocation and further upward trajectory commodity prices have had. I continue to stress that point. They've had such a great move. But so, yeah, Jack's point is oil was free, oil was zero. Oil is now 130. So, you can't even do math on that. What percentage move when something moves off of zero, right? I don't know. Jack, you're smarter in math than I am, but I know your calculator will
publish your error. I would say that the point is that they were dead money for a long time. So
they were.
Investors that were patiently waiting are finally getting rewarded there. But as you said, you know, the whole, especially the Western world, wants to go green. But a lot of it, I think, is somewhat greenwashing. Like if you're, you know, offshoring stuff over to China or Bangladesh and countries where, you know, we don't use coal here as much as they do. But if we're getting all our, you know, goods from them or a lot of our goods, you know, you're just basically pushing stuff over to jurisdictions that have, you know, lower employment standards, increased environmental issues. So that there's some of the, like I said, a lot of the greenwashing that you see is because, you know, Canadians don't want it in their backyard. They don't want a coal plant or whatever the case. But, you know, they're certainly happy to get, you know, cheaper T-shirts and, you know, refrigerators and dishwashers, those types of things from those less friendly, I guess, jurisdictions.
Hey, Don, I want you to pipe in here. And again, you have enough wisdom and experience with the markets. And again, of course, we have to pay attention to 11 different sectors and try to become experts in each of those sectors. And again, so we're speaking now about energy. And Jack, I want you to pipe in as well. No, I want you to pipe in as well on this one here, Jack. But so let's think now about Germany and its relationship with Russia. The carbon relationship that they had was significant. They just turned that off. At the same time, if I'm not mistaken, Germany, I think, is vowing to move away from nuclear. It is the power, it is the industrial powerhouse of Europe. What is Germany to do to get its joules of output energy if it's not going to use nuclear and will no longer have a source from Russia? What's it going to do?
It's fascinating because particularly Germany, they have made some very strange policy changes during the last little while. They had a plan to shut down two of the four nuclear power plants that they had. Now, all of a sudden, looks like they're not going to do that because they really need that energy, particularly if they're not getting natural gas from Russia, which they've been doing up to now. Well, that tells you something. It tells you that the nuclear power area is really starting to wake up. Not only in Europe, but also here in North America. We've seen uranium prices over the last 6 months almost double, which is really quite amazing. And you've seen...
Yeah, I'm sorry, how much is a pound of yellow cake, as they call it?
Yeah, it's around...
And it sells by the pound, friends. How much?
$55 US per pound.
Yeah, is that the spot price?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, but again, friends at home, I have to step in here on this. The spot market in uranium is very illiquid and very, very thin. It's by appointment only, as they say. So I was taught, don't pay too much attention to spot. More importantly, what are they renewing those long-term supply agreements with the power producers? Because they set up long-term contracts to supply reliable, predictable amounts of yellow cake to all of the power producers who require it. Exactly. And I'm curious how those contracts are going to roll out as they renegotiate those deals. But certainly, you know, Jack and I have been holding Cameco, Canada's largest and the world's second largest uranium producer. And the stock looks absolutely gorgeous, doesn't it, Don?
Yeah, just don't forget the ETF that covers that sector too. It's the symbol is URA. And there's basically a basket of uranium stocks. Clearly, Cameco is a big part of that. But something to also consider if you're looking at uranium.
Well, nice way to diversify yourself in the space. Speaking with my friend Don Velo, a market technician, a true veteran on Bay Street, a very passionate man when it comes to the world of high finance, very well learned. In this business, my friends, experience matters. You got to put in the time. Once you do, all powerful. We're going to get a little commercial break in here for you and come right back to the show about money, Hi-Fi Radio. I am Wolfgang Klein, portfolio manager, along with my partner, Jack Hartle, portfolio manager. Any questions for us, please, wolfgangklein.com. We shall respond to them all. Stay tuned.
Money. Let's take a break. But after, Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio, 640 Toronto.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Welcome back, my friends. A little spring in our stride this Saturday night. Let's have a little party, shall we? Talking stock, we're talking money. Want to help you build some wealth. I always love to hang out with the wise men on Bay and Wall Street. I learned so much. I am a sponge. Don Velo, a real mentor of mine, I shall say, met him 21 years ago when I moved from broadcasting into onto Bay Street. And Don was just a wonderful, wonderful father figure, shall I say. Guide me along and help me out. And I remember the market was real negative, and I quickly became negative with it. So I was probably sitting 40% in cash for my clients at the time. And the market started to just turn up a little bit, and I was denying the upward tick. Fighting the upward tick. And I called Don. I said, Don, it's just wrong. It shouldn't go up. The market should continue to fall. He said, well, don't fight it. You got to get long in here. If you hold too much cash and the market runs away, you're going to lose clients. He was dead right. Don, I will never forget that advice. You probably forgot giving me that advice because you gave me so much of it. But that really, really resonated with me. And Jack, you'll laugh at this because I then bought into Don's thesis, and my buddy, your buddy Jack JJ, him and I got into it back because he was helping me on the denial side, and I had to leave his deny camp and get into the optimistic camp. So we had a bet as to if the Dow would hit 10,000, because that was below 10,000 back then. Unbelievable! It's now 35,000, by the way, friends. That's right. 2 decades later, the Dow went from 10 to 35,000, and that's actually underperformance against historical measures. Nonetheless, we had a bet, and I won the bet, and then he doubled down like Fred Flintstone. We bet again that the market wouldn't go higher, and it did. I won again. He ended up owing me 10 lunches because we got two for one. And of course, he never made good on any of them, but he too gave me a lot of advice, so I let him get off scot-free. So anyway, that's Don, you helped me win a bet. You helped me make some money for my clients. You gave me a lot of good advice. And you know, I'm going to take away from that as well. I'll share it with you, my friends. Timing the market in a big manner is almost impossible to do consistently. On the periphery, when you make changes, you are speculating and timing, but that's just with a little bit of your money. You know, 5, 10%, you can constantly rotate through. But the way you make money on Bay Street and on Wall Street is the way Warren Buffett taught Jack and I. You buy good businesses and you have to hang on to them. Log time with those companies. Facebook, Apple, Google, Royal Bank, Toronto Dominion Bank, Scotia Bank, go down the list. Commodity stocks are different. I will say commodity stocks are different. Do not fall in love with them. You buy them when they hate them and sell them when they love them. But we're going to pivot over right now from commodities into the healthcare space. That too, Don, is a very tricky space to play. U.S. healthcare, you know, drives global healthcare, but the U.S. healthcare system is so different than our healthcare system. They have this company called United Health. It's a benefits management company. It operates on margins of just under 2%, and it is ripe for destruction. But it never gets destructed by technology. It continues to be a dominant player. Biotech is binary. Big pharma is always under the scrutiny of whoever is trying to get into power. Right now, they're in power, so it probably has a bit of a free pass for a little while. And then there's medtech. You know, which makes those hips and knees and that part of the business is a little more tolerable. Anyways, Don, share with us, because I do like healthcare. Canada itself as an index has very little healthcare. Population is aging and there's more bodies on the planet. So certainly it is a growth industry, but just a little trickier, I think, to invest in. Don, give us some guidance on it.
Well, first of all, congratulations, because you've been investing in high quality situations and that's in the best interest of your clients. When it comes to healthcare, what I look at is a little bit on the seasonality side of it. Historically, the healthcare sector does very well right from, would you believe, March the 15th, right through until, usually until September of each year. And that's in the U.S., of course, because that's where the stocks trade. But you can buy U.S. healthcare sector in exchange-traded funds that trade in Canadian dollars. There are several of them available. Let me mention the ones that I've been watching closely recently. ZUH, that's one from BMO. That's a basket of about 70 U.S. healthcare stocks, equally weighted, so you don't have to be worried about one individual company having a big influence on the value of the fund. Another one is symbol is HHL, trades again on the TSX exchange. That's a different animal. Again, what that is a basket of U.S. Healthcare stocks that have covered call rights against them. So it's a bit of a different strategy. So if you want to look for healthcare with income, you look at HHL. And if you want to just own the sector for a seasonal play between now and September, ZUH is an excellent choice.
You mentioned they both trade in Canadian dollars. Are they hedging out the currency exposure to the U.S. dollar? Because if you buy J&J, it's a U.S. company, U.S. denominated security, which means you are exposed to the movement of the U.S. dollar. Right now, the U.S. dollar, well, the Canadian dollar looks like it wants to push higher with crude. We'll see. But from our work, the Canadian dollar is undervalued. It should be higher based on, you know, $100 crude plus.
Very important. You can choose to trade this in Canadian dollars, which is hedged against currency, or you can buy the one which is not hedged. Really, it's your choice. And my preference is to, if you're a Canadian investor, just choose the Canadian choice. It's probably the easiest way of doing it. There's a reason why this is going to work. See, right now we've got these COVID-19 infections, and slowly but surely the disease is starting to dissipate, should we say. That means that the healthcare sector is going to focus more on other things like surgeries and medical implements, that kind of thing, which are much more higher margin. And therefore, that sector is in an optimal position to benefit from the recovery of the COVID-19 infection situation.
Yeah, the healthcare industry has changed, and it is changing. As a matter of fact, I just had a doctor appointment prior to this radio show. My good doctor was 30 minutes late for the appointment. Not a problem. Some doctors apparently give you a two-hour window. Mine didn't. He gave me a firm appointment. But he called me just as this show was about to be recorded. And over the phone, diagnosed me. We went through the situation and prescribed me a solution. So I didn't have to go to his office, I didn't have to burn any carbon to get there. But the industry certainly, Don, has a lot of pent-up demand, a lot of deferred, delayed, pushed off procedures that have to come to fruition. But all those other companies that were doing so well, the testing stocks, right? Correct, Jack, for diagnostic, for testing, all of those companies that had a good move higher, including, of course, the vaccination producers, you'd have to expect them to wane and money rotate into other parts of healthcare, Don?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. There are so many new things happening in that sector right now. And because of the change in the demand, after COVID-19 is gone, then that means you have to be selective in where you go in your healthcare investments.
In terms of the geopolitical crises that we're witnessing right now globally, how many different geopolitical conflicts that ended up in, you know, bombs being blasted and guns being fired, have you worked through in your career, Don? And the way the market is acting and reacting presently, is it similar to the way it's previously acted during these types of times?
Yeah, it's fascinating. There's an index which helps you to figure out what's going on here, called the VIX index. When the VIX index is going higher, that means that scare tactics are getting higher and higher. The best time to be a buyer in the equity market is after the VIX reaches a very important peak, because when it starts going down, that means the concerns about things like war are reduced, and people become more positive, and they start to buy stocks. And if you look at what's happened to the VIX during the last, couple of months, it peaked right around the 38 level, and just during the last 2 weeks, it's starting to come down. That right now, it's down to 22%, which is quite a drop. But the key is to follow the trend of the VIX. The VIX is heading downward. When the VIX heads downward, stock prices move higher. We could see that VIX go all the way back down to around the 15% level, which would imply much higher equity prices over the next few months.
Don and Jack, feel free to pipe in, my buddy. Captain Jack, of course, a former captain in the Canadian Reserves. But I'm looking at, and thank you again for pointing out the VIX to me. All these different tools that we have available, you know, you use the tool for a period of time, then you put it back in the toolbox, and you say, I want to take a look at that tool again. And you're surprised when you revisit the chart. But I'm looking at the VIX chart, and Jack pays a lot of attention watching the VIX for our team. But I'm looking at the VIX chart right now, which is a measure of volatility. And this market did not get terribly volatile as the bombs fell or as the tanks were lining up in front of the Ukraine. In fact, the VIX was twice as volatile, shall I say, during the COVID scare than it was at the peak at the onset of what could potentially be the start of a World War III. But I'm saying, because the VIX didn't spike, Don, and because the market really hasn't had any major sell-off, and in fact, the Canadian market is actually positive on the year, the market, with all of its wisdom, is telling me this conflict will end with the good guys winning. And again, no one's a winner in this conflict. When people say, gee, the Ukrainians are winning the battle. Winning? Really? Their cities are being bombed. Everyone is a loser. You, I, and the Russians, and everyone's a loser in this one here, and it's got to end. But the market is telling me it's going to end, Don. Again, any merit in my statement?
Yeah, I like the idea. As the conflict in Ukraine starts to slow down, and looks like more of a stalemate now, when that eventually does end, it probably will within the next month, that also will be another very, very positive factor for North American equity markets. That'll be another reason for less volatility in the markets, and by definition, a lower VIX as well. So that scenario plays very well right through until at least this summer. After that, we should look at it again.
You know, it's funny, Jack said to me, and I want you to pipe in here, Jack, in the last minute and a half here, but you said to me, you said, Wolf, sure, from abroad, those Russians will dominate, but once it gets into a street fight, look out. And that's what we certainly have witnessed. Pipe in here, Jack. And also talk to me a little bit about the Russian dissension, if I may, about the generals who are starting to back away from the Kremlin.
Well, I really think that they're seeing, you know, it's a very difficult war that they've engaged in, and honestly, I don't even think that Putin realized how difficult it was going to be. Russia has one of the biggest militaries in the world outside of the U.S. And the fact is that, the Ukrainians really aren't, I'm not going to say engaging them, but they're not really engaging them on, the open field, because that's not where they can win. So the fact is, if it gets to city fighting and urban warfare, that's one of the most difficult type of combat to win. And you can just look at what happened with, the U.S. and Iraq and some of the losses that they had there. But I would say that this time is a little different, Wolf, in terms of the previous conflicts that you've had, just because of the fact that you have the world's largest nuclear power. They actually have more nuclear power than the U.S., not military, but nuclear, invading a European democratic country. So it's very different. But we had Sandy McIntyre on a couple weeks ago, and what he was saying was very important. Is when you invest towards the most likely outcome. There's a range of probabilities. You want to make sure that your investments are aligned with the most likely outcome. And what you said is true. Most likely, this war will end, hopefully sooner rather than later. And hopefully we can see the economic recovery continue. And in that type of a situation, you want to be long risk assets like equities. And that's what the market and the VIX are both telling you.
Good speak, guys. I appreciate it. The good guys will prevail. May it happen sooner rather than later. Don Velo, market technician, good friend of mine, the grandfather of Bay Street, shall I say. Such a pleasure to have you on. I'm going to give you a little James Brown next time I bring you on, all right? The grandfather of funk, setting it up for Don Velo. It'll be a lot of fun, Don. Have a good weekend, my friend. Quick break. Get right back to the show about money, Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto.
Don't go anywhere. There's more great show after this. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
I let Jack at the Wheels of Steel to cue up a song, and that's what he picked for us. Quite appropriate. Well done, Jack. Well, let's speak to our chief North American strategist, Mr. Martin Roberge. Good waspy name. Martin, welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, and thanks for having me.
Our last guest was just pointing me back to the old Vixie-poo, the VIX indicator. Friends at home, if you don't know what the VIX is, it's an instrument that trades. It's the difference between the price of short-term puts and long-term puts divided by short-term calls and long-term calls, the spread paid for the two. It basically is looking at the price of insuring your portfolio. And so when the market gets riskier, the cost to protect it by the use of options, puts and calls, to protect your position goes up. So just to help you get a better understanding of how it's measured and why it moves the way it does. But the VIX itself, the options market's telling us this conflict is being relatively contained. And with all the global bottlenecks that have occurred during COVID, locking Russia and, of course, by default, Ukraine out of the global commodity market, I'm surprised there hasn't been further dislocation to sectors across the board beyond just the first derivative, which are the commodities themselves pushing higher. Can you speak to that, Martin?
Yeah, it's another layer. Like, actually, we gotta say that even before the Russian Ukraine conflict, we could see that supply chain disruptions were being seen like all around the world. The problem is that when we got that conflict, that war, like it added another layer of risk on the energy front, because Russia is such a huge provider of not only oil but products as well and natural gas. So it's the second largest producer of products, all the products in the world. And we know that if 10 million barrels a day of production is not going anywhere, well, you're tightening the energy market quite dramatically, and it feeds on the supply chain. It feeds to other commodities such as fertilizers, agricultural products as well. So this like we're going through probably the perfect storm when it comes to supply chain disruptions, pressure on commodity prices, and this is probably something that that looks similar to what we saw in 2008 when the barrel of oil like hit almost $150 in June 2008.
Well, Martin, I have to thank you, and I know Jack wants to thank you as well. Merci beaucoup, mon ami. A year ago, you helped Jack and I reposition our portfolios. A change was a coming last March. You could see it. Tech began to get toppy, and you saw these names that are the stars today begin to hit bottom and turn the corner. I'm speaking about energy stocks, pipeline stocks. The REITs were pretty stable right through. Mainly that commodity space, along with the value trade overall, looked like it was getting set for some for a decent move. So as such, we increased our commodity position, Martin, probably from about 9% to 25%, and we reduced our tech position from probably 30% down to 15%. The trade, of course, or the change didn't work right away. It never does. We were investing for the next year or two, and sure enough, you fast forward. Those changes we made, I'd say 80% of them have been very, very fruitful. And the ones that didn't work out were basically flat. So I thank you very much for joining us today. I'm gonna do my job live on the radio and ask you, how do you think we should be positioned today looking forward 12 to 18 months? What do you like? What sectors are you really keen on? What countries are you keen on? And what don't you like? What should we be underweight, Martin?
Yeah. The there's no like again if we divide the block the world in two parts and then and four parts and then two parts we've got four parts we've got Canada U.S. we've got Europe what we call EFI markets and we've got emerging markets. There's no doubt that when you start from top to bottom you've got to be in North America and maybe like we've been diversifying away into global markets for 10 years. But I think starting this year and probably late last year, it was a time when we especially when we saw this conflict erupting, to start bringing back some of that money home. And one of the reasons for that is that when you look at global equity investors, some of them do what we call ESG investing. So they invest in companies, they rate companies. And when you have companies dealing with, for example, Russia, let's say an airline company getting its jet fuel from Russia. Well, if you're a global equity manager, you got to move away from that airline company and reallocate that cash elsewhere in the world. So if you apply that, there are so many companies in Europe still dealing with Russia that you have to start scaling back and moving that money from the old continent in North America because, like, we are more responsible producers when it comes to energy production. So North America is the first place to start. And then within North America, I think there's still room for, again, like what we call value stocks, commodity stocks to thrive. But there will be a shift eventually into the more defensive areas, probably going into the second half of the year. So we're going to have to be nimble and advisors will need to guide their clients in those right defensive sectors because there's probably a likelihood that we have more than 50% chance of a recession over the next 12 to 18 months. So we're going to have to deal with that by putting more money into the defensive areas of the market.
I haven't heard the R word in a long time. Martin, are you trying to bring us down? I don't think so. You're just trying to guide us and stay dispassionate. That's very smart. Speaking with Martin Roberge, our chief North American strategist at Canaccord Genuity, it's a delight to have access to such brilliant minds to help us better serve our clients. Going to take a quick break and get right back to Hi-Fi Radio.
Listen, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, more money talk. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
So, about money. I'm Wolfgang Klein, Portfolio Manager. I help people build and maintain wealth. That's what it's all about. Have more than you need, and then you can do so much good and take care of yourself and those around you. Maybe even jet set over to Europe and do the good cause. Our veterinarian, Dr. Cliff, seeing some pictures on Instagram on him. He's a veterinarian for the Wellington Vet Hospital. He's gone over to Poland to take in some injured animals from the Ukraine and giving them some care. He's working really hard and doing a good job. And his GoFundMe page, he managed to raise $59,000. Quite fascinating what you can do with technology. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But the market right now isn't that keen on technology. It likes stuff. Yes, if you drop it on your foot and it hurts, it's stuff. You know, a pound of copper, a barrel of oil, a bushel of wheat. You know, Jack used to work on a sod farm. I guess you could have also worked out in the prairies, eh, Jack? Lifting bales of hay and throwing them up in the back of the trailer as they take it in.
Yeah, I think all the soft commodities are up too, Wolf, especially with wheat. You know, Ukraine, I think, and Russia supply a third of the world's wheat. So I guess bread prices are going up at the grocery store as well, Wolf.
Yeah, well, so again, you worked on a sod farm, and yep. I remember last year I went and bought some sod, and I needed one more roll, and by the afternoon it was gone, sold out. They couldn't keep the sod in stock. And, of course, that sod requires fertilizer, nutrients of stock that we own. Stock's done so well. It's a former Agrium and Potash. And, one of the largest, the world's largest potash producer, or second largest, I think, is in Russia. Take that offline and, well, now nutrient gets more attention. Martin Roberge, our North American strategist, graciously spending some time with us. Before the break, he said there is a 50% chance that we go into recession. I said, don't bring me down, buddy. Cued up the Beatles song. It was close enough. Close enough for the cause. Martin, talk to us about that. The economy's hot. Inflation's running. Employment is full in the United States. And you see signs of a recession?
No, but you see the signs through the yield curve with various segments of the yield curve. Flattening and turning or inverting one after the other. So that just for the listeners, like the yield curve is the spread between long-term bonds and short-term bonds. And when short-term bonds are rising because inflation is rising, long-term bonds will rise as well, but they will eventually rise less if they believe that the rate hikes will eventually slow the economy down. So this is not something for the next quarter or even the second half of the year. This is more something that we have to pay attention to for next year, because the curves, when they invert, normally a year after the inversion, we have at least a growth scare if it's not a recession. And we think that those curves will probably be the inverting in the second half of this year and probably project a slowdown in 2023. But for now, it's not going to happen because we still have, as you mentioned, the service side of the economy that has to have its cycle. Like we bought stuff, now we're doing stuff, and this is going to be the story of 2023. But we feel that once we get the service cycle being kind of consumed, it gets to a point where the propensity for consumers to spend either on goods or on services will be emptied or will get close to an end. And this is when normally you're going to get the impact of rate hikes biting on the economy as well. So this is something that we see more in 2023. But normally the market will try to discount this slowdown or recession like a year in advance. So this is why, as we said before, now I think it's still okay to be in the value name, the cyclical name, but the second half of the year could look way different than the first half of the year.
Martin, I need to ask you, because the yield curves speak about when short-term interest rates get above long-term interest rates, the market or the economy goes into recession. The reason being is because banks stop lending money because they won't make money on it. The yield curve did invert. Jack, Martin, what, about 3 years ago? The economy did not go into a recession because of the yield curve inverting. COVID came along that knocked us into a self-inflicted recession. What is the accuracy of the yield curve inverting and then putting us into a recession versus a growth scare?
But one thing is we have to keep in mind is that when you have various segments, like it's not only like the 10-2, the 5-2, but when you get the 5-3 as well, and you get there are several segments of the yield curve that are inverting at the same time. Well, this is one red flag among many other indicators that we look at. So it's like we have what we call a bear market timing indicator at Canaccord that we track every month, and it gives us also a perspective on the risk of a recession. So it's one key indicator, but it's not all. We think we're going to see red flags, if not yellow flags, from the other indicators that we follow. And this is when probably you're going to see also the impact of the increase in bond yields, the increase in energy prices, oil, the increase in the U.S. dollar taking their toll on the economy. There's a lag of about 6 months. So we'll pay attention and inform the advisors when we get those yellow, if not red, flags in due time, probably around the summer.
Okay, so basically you're saying once the bond market has the yield curve invert, i.e. short-term interest rates go above long-term interest rates, that then gives you about a one-year time horizon before the economy could potentially go into recession. Hence, that could push recession out to 2023 or 2024. Jack, please pipe in here.
Yeah, to answer your question there out of the gate, Wolf, I believe it inverted around 2018, my best guess. And then actually the Fed, Powell, started cutting rates again. So it actually looked like we were headed for a soft landing, meaning, you know, the economy was slowing down. The Federal Reserve was being more accommodative. And it looked like going into 2020, we were not going to go into a recession, meaning that they started to reaccelerate growth. And then sort of out of nowhere, obviously COVID hit and completely stopped the economy. So it was, like you said, a self-induced recession when basically governments went out and stopped the economy. And then they sent out, obviously, stimulus checks to individuals to bridge the gap. And we're sort of dealing with the consequences of that now, right? You give people free money and you lock them in their rooms or in their houses. What are they going to do? They're going to, you know, fix their house, or they're going to fix their basement, do a deck, do a fence, whatever the case, and you can see the price of lumber doing what it's doing. But as Martin said, you know, you can only fix your basement once or reno your basement once. Once all that stuff is done, you get the transition into services. So it's funny how it's all linked together. But getting back to your original question, Wolf, it looked like we're in for a soft landing, and then COVID sort of sideswiped the recovery.
Well, my friends, that's it for the show. Another Saturday night time flies on all levels, I must say. Martin Roberge, always a pleasure to get your insight. I do appreciate the work that you publish and send to Jack and I each and every week. You're a key member on the Wolf on Bay Street team. Jack, great job as always. Friends at home, please, any questions, never hesitate to give us a call. Visit us, wolfgangklein.com. I want to wish you a great weekend, and please pray hard for those in the Ukraine and those innocent Russian civilians as well. It's affecting everyone. May the conflict end. God bless you.
been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartle, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any money questions you need answered, email Wolf and Jack at wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. We'll see you next week.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.